I'm Tanzina Vega. It's The Takeaway, and I'm glad you're with us. For the past few years, life in Puerto Rico has been difficult. The island has been hammered by a debt crisis, Hurricane Maria, systemic corruption, and now the coronavirus pandemic. And according to a new investigation from Gen Magazine and Type Media Center, the rate of intimate partner violence has also been on the rise. In 2018, at least 23 women in Puerto Rico were killed by former or current intimate partners. That's more than twice the rate of the rest of the United States. Andrea Gonzalez Ramirez is a senior writer for Gen and an Ida B. Wells Fellow at Type Investigations, and her reporting points to systemic failures by the Puerto Rican government that have contributed to the troubling rise of violence against women and the failures to hold their killers accountable. Andrea, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Tanzina. Thank you for having me.
So we know the scale of the problem. We're talking about 23 women who have been killed. What were some of the factors that you found that contributed to this problem on the island?
So we saw an uptick in murders right after Hurricane Maria. And the way that advocates see this crisis is one that was directly related to the storm, right? After Hurricane Maria, there was no power, no clean water, no access to employment, healthcare, and all of those factors we know that after a natural disaster can contribute to make the home a much more unsafe environment for victims of intimate partner violence. So that's one part of it. The second part of it is the way that the government has systematically failed survivors for years and years and years. They've known this has been a problem since at least 1989, when the law criminalizing domestic violence was first passed in Puerto Rico. And even then, we still have issues with how the police handles cases, with how the courts handle cases, and the government has not really seen this issue as a priority that needs to be dealt with.
Andrea, femicide is the systemic killing of women, and this has happened throughout the world. We've also seen it happening throughout Latin America. Why has it been so difficult for there to be any sort of protective measures passed in Puerto Rico? You mentioned the law against domestic violence was passed in 1989, which is still relatively late, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the holdup here? I know that there were women's groups that wanted to meet with Ricardo Rosselló before his ouster. Tell us more about that.
Well, part of it is just like Puerto Rican society at large, right? Puerto Rican society is a machista society. It's a very patriarchal, conservative society where some sectors that have outside influence in the government, like far-right conservatives and religious groups, don't view this as an issue. They don't view gender equality as an issue, and therefore they think that domestic violence is a problem of the house, of like inside the home, instead of a public health issue. And there's no political will for a lot of the lawmakers to make this a priority. They're more busy passing anti-abortion legislation or the new civil code in the island instead of hearing the claims from like advocates who have been fighting on this issue for a really long time.
And Andrea, do we know whether or not economic stressors have also added to this? Generally speaking, when people are also out of work, the high rates of unemployment on the island have sort of had a double impact with the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, et cetera. Is this also a question of people being out of work and economic stressors?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely the debt crisis that the island has seen has contributed to the uptick in violence and the lethality of the violence, but also the ability of the government to respond to this crisis. Puerto Rico's finances are currently managed by a fiscal control board, and they make a ton of decisions on how the government's money is supposed to be spent, which that means is that there's been a ton of austerity measures that have impacted, for example, the police. There are fewer police officers now than there were 10 years ago, and that definitely also has an impact in their ability to do their job, combined with the things that we already talked about, like the machismo culture and just this inability of seeing domestic violence as a public health issue.
And for those who may not know, machismo culture is sexist culture, essentially.
Yes.
Andrea, can you talk to us about one person's story that really stood with you in your reporting?
Yeah. So the story that stuck out to me the most was that of Zuliani Calderon Nieves. She was a 38-year-old healthcare worker who was murdered by her ex-husband in front of her children in May of 2018. Suliani did not seek help from the police, but she did seek a protective order that was not renewed in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria. And it was just one of those cases that showed to the extent that victims may not feel like they're safe seeking help, and they may feel like people in their immediate family and in their community might not understand that there's abuse happening within within their homes behind closed doors. So yeah, her story really stuck out to me, and she's kind of like the main character throughout the investigation. Also because her family has now taken the role of advocates and have really been calling for Governor Wanda Vasquez to declare a state of emergency due to the crisis of gender violence in the island.
I want to get a little bit more into what Wanda Vasquez is doing about this. But before that, we mentioned earlier that there have been women's groups on the island. A lot of, in fact, before Governor Rosselló was ousted by the Puerto Rican people, there were women's groups who had been setting up shop in front of the governor's mansion to get the attention of Governor Rosselló at the time. And they were not invited to speak to the governor, from what we understand. Where do a lot of those organizations stand today, Andrea? What type of work are they trying to do under the Wanda Vasquez administration?
So they've been calling for Governor Vasquez to declare the state of emergency, which basically would release additional funds and prioritize this crisis with the utmost urgency, just like you would see with a declaration of emergency for hurricanes, for earthquakes, for the debt crisis, for the coronavirus, you name it. So the work that they've been doing has been a lot of like education, outreach to victims, and all of that, but they cannot do that work alone. So they've been calling on the government to also support them in this way, but that has not happened. In 2018 was when the wave of protests began to like get this declaration of emergency going. And this was because by November 2018, it had become increasingly clear that it was the worst year for women in Puerto Rico in recent history. Because as you said at the top of the show, 23 women got killed that year, which was more than twice the rate in the U.S. mainland.
Andrea, we know, though, that Wanda Vasquez has heard these calls. Ricardo Rosselló also heard the calls and then, as we mentioned, was ousted from his position. But Wanda Vasquez has heard the calls. This is not new. What is her response to these calls?
She declared a national alert, which basically is kind of like a watered-down version of the declaration of emergency and doesn't go as far. And through that national alert, she created a working group that's supposed to come up with a plan on how to handle domestic violence in the island. But that plan, we have not seen it yet. The working group started organizing last fall. The national alert was passed in September of 2019, but there's still no draft of the plan that has been made public. So we really do not know what that looks like. And some feminist groups that were part of the working group have since left because they say that the government has not really taken their concerns or their suggestions to heart, and they're just like, you know, pretending to be working, making suggestions such as creating an education campaign against reggaeton, the popular urban music genre, instead of looking at the systemic failures within the government.
Well, let's not forget that we are in the middle of a global pandemic. COVID-19 has affected Puerto Rico as well. We know that here in the United States, there have been many concerns because of shelter-in-place orders about increasing cases of domestic violence here in the United States and around the world. What is the situation on the island, Andrea, with the COVID-19 right now? Are people, I know that there's been a curfew that's been extended, but what is the situation on the ground?
Yeah, so for a few months, the island was in total lockdown. That has since been lifted, but there's still some restrictions. And as you mentioned, there's a curfew. Some essential workers are already going back to work. And, you know, the curfew remains mandatory. So if you are not out of your house after 10 p.m., you're probably going to get arrested. The cases have been slowly increasing in recent days, which has been a cause of concern as people kind of like retake their regular lives. And Juan Dabasquez just announced that if you are traveling to Puerto Rico, you need to take a serological coronavirus test before you're allowed into the island, or otherwise you're going to have to quarantine for 14 days.
And last but not least, the island has also declared a state of emergency because of a severe drought. 140,000 some odd folks are without running water right now. Andrea, what's the latest?
Yeah, there have been rationing water, which is something that, you know, happens pretty often during the summer because of this drought that you mentioned. So yeah, that's been like kind of like a ongoing issue that we've seen before.
Andrea Gonzalez Ramirez is senior writer for Gen Magazine and an Ida B. Wells Fellow at Type Investigations. Thanks for joining us again, Andrea.
Thank you for having me.